It's Wednesday, the 11th of November, 2015. Happy birthday to Hilton Armstrong. Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Brendan Graff, who you can find on Twitter at Brendan_Graff. And if you want to get on board and sponsor the podcast like Brendan did, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. And thank you to everybody who has done that. I've got quite a few of them in the vault ready to come out and sponsor the next week or so of podcasts. And if you want to join that illustrious crew, please leave a review on iTunes. And of course, if you're in Australia or New Zealand, moneyball.com.au is the daily fantasy site where you want to go and play some NBA daily fantasy. And tomorrow they have their biggest tournament ever. It is this might seem small to a lot of you listeners, but it's a $7,000 tournament, the biggest tournament they've got. So we need to make sure we fill this tournament quickly so they know that there is a voracious appetite from Australian and New Zealand daily fantasy players to get these tournaments filled, and we can get the prize pools right up. Obviously, some disappointing news in the States today with the New York ruling on daily fantasy. Hopefully, we see DraftKings and FanDuel fight this ruling and get it overturned. It defies common sense to me. But I want to talk about that just for in a second. But before we get into talking about that, I just want to introduce today's guest. It is the one and only Matt Smith. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well, Josh. How are you?
I'm good. And where can everyone find you on Twitter, Matt?
You can find me on Twitter at SmanSports. So come and follow me over there. I'll answer all your fantasy basketball questions and give you some news and updates and stats and whatever throughout the day as well. So looking forward to the $7,000 prize pool for Moneyball tomorrow. $1,500 first prize, mate. You wouldn't even get out of bed for $1,500, would you?
Nah, it takes a little bit more than that to get me going for the day. I need a, you know what it's like being a high roller like I am, Matt. I sleep on a bit of notes.
I'm not going to even go there.
Now, what I do want to talk about, Matt, is I guess we can offer somewhat of a perspective, but not a great perspective on the information that the Daily Fantasy Sports was banned. It was deemed illegal by the Attorney General today in New York. Now, this is not it's not a legal ruling as such. From what I understand, is that the Attorney General's come out and said, this is my opinion that it is illegal, it is gambling, and you guys should stop. It is not a situation where they've gone, you guys have to stop, it is illegal for you to keep going. And as of what I understand, DraftKings and FanDuel are still going for the time being and obviously determining what they're going to do. To me, Matt, and I'm sure it is to you as well, the whole situation just is batshit crazy to me. It makes no sense. We live in a country where sports gambling, there's no problem with it. It defies logic to me that there is such an issue with the word gambling over in the States, and that something like this, that which increases the interest in the leagues, and obviously that's why the leagues are so invested in it, has such an issue with people who clearly have got not a clue of what's going on.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. I think the one for me is where they ruled it that it's a... I haven't read up too much on it today, but a game of chance, not a game of skill.
Yeah,
is that correct?
That's their definition of to make it gambling, that it's a game of chance. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, obviously there is a chance, but there is a lot of skill involved as well in terms of the research and the information that we go through to, and especially you, to give the viewers and the listeners the best picks for each day. So let's hope that for all our friends in New York and the States that the ruling gets overturned.
Yeah, definitely. And if you want to hear some more interesting information about that decision today, from a legal point of view, Mark Roberts on the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast had an episode today with Daniel Green and Justin Fielkow, two lawyers, two attorneys, one in New York and one guy in Illinois who are in the daily fantasy industry as well. So they've got a legal perspective and a fantasy perspective on the rulings. So it'd be I've listened to it. It's interesting to listen to their perspective. So go check out Mark's podcast today at dailyfantasybasketballpodcast.com. Now, enough of that. Go ahead.
How come Mark got two attorneys on his show and you got stuck with me?
Because I got first choice, Matt. I got the cream of the crop Yeah, the cream of the crop and the person who's awake in the middle of the night US time.
Fair enough. I'll do it. I'll take it.
Cool. We're not going to dwell on legal things because, you know, I know that it's a load of shit. You know that it's a load of shit. You know that it's a game of skill because, you know what, Matt, if I was to go up against my mum in a head-to-head, I'm pretty sure I'd beat her every single time.
And your mum's pretty good.
Nah, she's switched on to the NBA. She knows all about it. She's all about the NBA. But if I was to go against her, I would beat her every single time. And if it was luck, I wouldn't. It's as straightforward as that. It is easy. And I saw a great argument against it today that if you were okay, so if it's gambling or whatever it is, you could put two things in front of a dog and get a dog to pick it, and they'd pick one. You know, like that octopus that picks the World Cup victors in soccer. You got a 50-50 chance of doing something, and when a line is spread, set by a casino or whatever, anyone can pick it. I guarantee if I go up against that octopus setting a DFS lineup, I'm pretty sure I'd beat him 100. I know I'd beat him 100 times. I'd beat a dog 100 times out of 100. There's definite skill involved, but I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir here when I talk about all that. Would you guys know all of that? So let's hope that that this New York attorney gets his ass handed to him if they do take it to court. But let's finish with that now, Matt. Let's talk the games from Tuesday. We're gonna do a preview. I'll try that again. We're gonna do a preview of the games from Wednesday later on. And before you know what? In the words of Michael Bolton, Matt.
Let's get to it.
Now, do you know what that is?
I believe it's a line from a movie.
It's not quite. And I had someone send me a message on Facebook the other day going, what's going on with Michael Bolton? It's really creepy. And I went, okay, so obviously you don't know what it is. If you don't know what it is, I'm not being just a creep with Michael Bolton saying,
let's get to it.
I need you to go and look up the music video to the song Jack Sparrow by Lonely Island. If you don't know what that song is, it's a pisser. You need to go and watch it. But Michael Bolton's at the start of that song, and you see the whole clip. But whenever I hear someone, or even when I hear myself say, all right, let's get started, let's get to it, I've always got Michael Bolton saying it in that exact manner in my head, so I thought I'd put it in the podcast. Go and watch this video, Jack Sparrow by Lonely Island, and you'll see the Michael Bolton drop in that, and then it will make a lot more sense. And then hopefully you'll laugh and not think that I'm a creep like whoever that was that sent me a message on Facebook. All right, monstrous line of the night, Matt. I'll let you go first. You're the guest. You get the honors.
Yes, it was Russell Westbrook for his 22 points, 11 rebounds, 11 assists, 1 steal, 3 threes. He did this all in under 28 minutes against the Wizards. Kevin Durant, who we'll talk about a little bit soon, left the game with an injury, but Westbrook was dominating. He's had a superb start to the season. This is his fifth 20-10 game in a row. Averaging 26 points, 7 rebounds, 11 assists, 2 steals, just killing it. So continued that form that he showed at the end of last season, and he's justified himself as that top 5 draft pick.
Can I ask you a question, Matt? Is Russell Westbrook a better player than Kevin Durant at the moment?
Fantasy or real life?
Real life.
Fantasy,
I don't think it's close. It's close, but Westbrook is, I think, clearly the better fantasy player. Is he a better real life player?
At the moment, I think you'd have to say is this Thunder team is his team at the moment. It was at the end of last season when Kevin Durant did those games with injury, and he's showing again that this is my team. And he's got to be not just the best player on the team, but one of the best players in the league as well. So yeah, he's just a phenomenal player. I was watching a game the other day, and he had the ball at the top of the 3-point line, and it was against the Spurs actually. And within a blink of the eye, he was at the basket, finished over Duncan and Aldridge with his left hand. Just his quickness and speed and athleticism is just incredible.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think that he is the best player on the Thunder team at the moment. Durant might get that title back, but the way things are at the moment, Westbrook is the better player of the two, and he's been putting up fantastic numbers. I had a feeling that you would go with Westbrook as your monstrous line of the night, Matt. I didn't go with Westbrook as mine. I went with a guy who was a little more unheralded than what Russ is, and that's Mo Williams of the Cleveland Cavaliers. He played 36 minutes. He scored 29 points on 8 of 9 shooting and 9 of 10 from the line. He had 6 rebounds, 6 assists, and 2 steals. And Mo Williams has been, it's safe to say he's been on fire lately. He's averaging 16.5 points, 2 threes, 3.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, a steal on 49% shooting. Now that 49% shooting is completely unreal, in both sort of uses of the word unreal, in that it's unsustainable and it is fantastic if you own him. I'm getting, and Trent Copeland's a guy who owns Mo Williams in one of my leagues and has been sending me deals, trying to send me Mo Williams in exchange for some of my other guys like Michael Carter Williams and Alfred Payton. And on the surface, Williams is clearly the better player at the moment. But how long does he maintain top 50 value for?
Well, the obvious answer is until Kyrie Irving comes back. I still don't think we've got a timetable on Kyrie as well. The last I read that he had a date in mind, but he didn't want to share that with the public. So who knows whether that's 4 weeks away, 6 weeks away. But for the time being, you got to still ride Mo Williams. And then even then, once Kyrie comes back, there may be, you know, a coming back period of 2, 3, 4 weeks. There may be games where he sits or rests. So Mo could very well have top 50, top 60 value for the next couple of months.
The problem is with Mo as well. Yes, that's right. But there's the return of Iman Shumpert as well. So the likelihood of Mo playing next to Kyrie is limited. Now, Mo had a lot of value last year in Charlotte playing next to Kemba Walker and in place of Kemba Walker. But to get those minutes in Cleveland to battle J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert, and then Matthew Dellavedova is going to get some minutes, it's going to bring you, he's playing 32 minutes a game at the moment. You think it's going to bring him down to 24, 22 minutes a game, that sort of range, which he could still be productive in. But it's hard for him to have season-long value in that sort of format. So what Trent's doing in terms of offering Mo Williams is a great idea to try and sell him, because when it comes playoff time, I don't think it might be a stage where he's the worst or second worst player on your team. But he's only 68% owned. That number should be 100. I don't know why he's not owned in 100% of leagues. It makes no sense. I know that there is that, yeah, he's going to drop off, but that might be a month. That might be 6 weeks away. Who knows? He should be owned everywhere. And if for some reason he's sitting on your waiver wire, you have to make sure Mo Williams is owned. There's literally no excuse for it at the moment. All right, waiver wire line of the night, Matt. Which direction did you go here?
I'm going to give this to two guys, if you don't mind. The first guy is Deion Waiters for OKC. Actually, he had 25 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 4 threes, shot 7 from 10 from the field, 7 from 7 from the free throw line. So, once again, a lot of this was with KD going down and the blowout there in that game. And the other one I'm going to give it to is Ish Smith for his 17 points, 12 assists, 3 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block. Now, I actually picked up Ish in our listener league yesterday, mainly for tomorrow's game, because I knew Drew Holiday would sit out one of the games in the back-to-back. So to get 17 and 12 from Ish in 27 minutes in the first game of the back-to-back was incredible. So both of those guys had superb lines.
Now, Ish Smith was the guy that I had down for the waiver wire line of the night. And your thinking is pretty spot on in terms of him having great value for tomorrow's back-to-back, except Drew Holiday only played 15 minutes today. So is there a possibility that Drew Holiday plays tomorrow and plays 15 minutes again? I think there's a big chance of that. Look, and you know, Smith will still get pretty decent minutes, but I think that the chance of Holiday sitting out is less than what it was this time yesterday.
Yeah, I think also with Anthony Davis left this game as well, so...
Yep. They were up easy as well. They were up a lot.
Yeah, Davis has got to be questionable for tomorrow's game. So if Davis doesn't play, it's probably more likely that they do have to play Drew Holiday and play him 15 to 20 minutes. But even as you said, that means Ryan Anderson could start, and Ish Smith, either way, is going to get some pretty big minutes and be a great play in season-long lineups and DFS.
Ish Smith was a guy that in the offseason, I was incredulous at the fact that the Sixers didn't re-sign him, or that no one signed him for so long. He was putting up great numbers. He showed a great chemistry with Nerlens Noel last season. He averaged in the last month over 6 assists and 13 points a game with the Sixers. And to me, it was bizarre that the Sixers didn't re-sign him. And considering they didn't have a point guard, and no, Tony Roten doesn't count, they needed a point guard. They needed someone to distribute the ball. And hey, I know TJ McConnell's filling that role now, but he's not as good of a scorer as Ish is. Not that Smith is a great scorer, but... it made no sense to me that he wasn't signed. And yes, he's putting up value now. That's a question for you, Matt. Would you rather have Ish Smith now or TJ McConnell?
Right now, I'd probably go Ish, just because, as you said, he's a better scorer. He can have these big games of assists like he had with the 12 tonight. We know TJ McConnell's had a couple of big games. TJ's also had some really nice block games in the point guard
position. A couple of double blocks, I think.
But with the Pelicans, you know, moving forward without Tyreke Evans for maybe the next 3, 4, 5 weeks, Ish looks to have that role. Until Evans comes back, and the same in Philly, TJ McConnell until Tony Roden and Kendall Marshall come back. So both guys who should be owned in 12-team leagues, but they do have limited value going forward over the next 4 to 6 weeks.
With the Pelicans, Norris Cole is due to come back as well. I maintain Ish Smith's a better player than Norris Cole. I don't rate Norris Cole at all. And I would be fine with Smith retaining the number 2 point guard role over Norris Cole when he does return. But obviously the return of Tyreke and the full health of Drew Holiday, you know, cuts into his value significantly. But you're right, both of those guys should be owned for now. What about your young gun of the night, Matt? To me, there was only one direction to go. You may have a different thought than I do in that award. Which way did you lean there?
No, one direction is correct. They are your favourite band. Karl Anthony Towns was the guy, and I'm just trying to bring up his stats. What did he do, Josh?
I'll tell you. He had 19 points. He had 13 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, 3 blocks, a little low on the field goal percentage, 7 of 16. But he hit all 5 of his free throws. He is now averaging 16 and 10 with 3 blocks a game on 49 and 91% shooting. He is currently in 9 category leagues. He is the 16th ranked player at the moment. He is, Matt, we said that in a couple of years he was going to be a top 10 player. We look pretty on track with that. And there's an argument that you could say that by the end of next season, he's a top 10 player.
Yeah, we knew he was going to be good, but we just didn't know he was going to be this good this early.
Yep.
As you said, those numbers are incredible. This is his 6th game in a row where he's had 3 or 4 blocks.
That's crazy.
It's insane. I had him as my number 10 on my dynasty rankings, so that's looking good as well. But the efficiency's there, the scoring, the rebounding, the blocks.
Like, he starts hitting threes.
Yeah, and he's doing this in 29 minutes a game, so he's not as if, you know, 36, 38 minutes, the big sort of Andrew Wiggins playing time numbers. So, yeah, if you drafted Anthony Towns, you're a very happy chappy right now.
He can, look, he's at 16 and 10, and you know, that could realistically go to 22 and 12. But the thing is, he's at 1.3 assists. He's a 3-assist-a-game guy. I've no doubt that at some point in his career, he'll be averaging 3 assists. The 3 blocks is not unrealistic, and he can be a half a 3-a-game guy as well. If there's anyone who's going to challenge Anthony Davis or Steph Curry for the number 1 fantasy player in the next 5 years, this is the guy that's got a huge chance. Well, Ben Simmons is also a guy who could do that, because he's a guy who's pretty much a 5x5 every game he plays, it seems like, at the moment. I think he had like a 5x5 the other day with like 7 steals or something like that. He's a guy who can contribute in all areas. And we just had Dean Vasich just tweeted us in, obviously watching the show live. So shout out to Dean. He says, Ish Smith was offered a contract by Philadelphia, but he didn't take it. He was interviewed on the Believe the Hype podcast with Tom Reed and Benyam Kadane. So I did not see that, Dean. So thank you for letting me know, because it did seem stupid to me that the Sixers didn't want Smith back. I don't know when they offered that to him, but I thought they would have looked to lock him up a lot earlier than that. Obviously, Towns is my young gun of the night as well. He's been superb. What about your dud of the night, Matt? Who did you look for that really let his owners down today?
Yeah, it's got to me was Goran Dragic. He's been there with the Heat against the Lakers. He had 4 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 from 10 from the field, which is un-Dragic-like. He's been poor, to say the least, to start the season, just averaging the 10 points. 4 rebounds, not even a 3 game, not even a steal a game. His efficiency has dropped off as well, highlighted by that 2 of 10 game today. So he's one of these guys who you would have drafted probably in the 45 to 60 range and really isn't giving you anywhere near that value at the moment. So I think it's probably a nice buy low case with Goran Dragic. I wouldn't expect him to return to those big numbers he put up with the Suns a couple of years ago, but I can't see him being this poor for the whole season. I think they're just playing through Bosch and Wade in particular, with him being healthy earlier on in the season, and also Whiteside's dominating for Miami as well. So yeah, just if you do own Goran Dragic, just be patient.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at his player page here on Basketball Monster, and we've got the notes that come through from Fantasy Alarm, and the second note here it calls him Goran Tragic. And that's pretty much the way that he's been playing this year. And yes, you're not dropping Goran Dragic at this point. You are just going extremely low on buy low offers for him. He was terrible. He was terrible the game before. This was the opportunity against the Lakers who allow huge numbers from opposition point guards. He didn't take control. He's not going to be that Phoenix Suns Goran Dragic All-NBA third team guy that he was. But he's also not going to be, this is Mario Chalmers like numbers. This is, we're going to talk about Chalmers a little bit later. He's putting up some absolute stinkers, and this is, if someone drops him, you definitely have to pounce on him and grab him and just weather the storm for a few weeks and see exactly what plays out. But he has been he's been pretty ordinary. My dud of the night goes to Wes Matthews of the Dallas Mavericks, and Matthews was supposed to be getting his minutes up to 30 minutes a game tonight. He'd been trending in the right direction. He played 15 minutes, Matt, and he had one rebound and one assist. Not the greatest of performances from Wes. He was a guy that I avoided in pretty much every draft that I played, that I drafted in this year. He is getting 25 minutes a game, so the injury is sort of impacting him in that degree. But it's not like he's only playing Chandler Parsons minutes. 25 minutes a game, there are lots of players who are playing 25 minutes, Kristaps Porzingis, who are top 100 fantasy relevant. He's playing 25 minutes a game. He's averaging 8.5 points, 1.7 threes, 2 rebounds, 1.3 assists on 31% shooting and 73% free throws. Now, we talked a lot in the offseason about guys coming back from Achilles surgeries, and he came back remarkably early. He was remarkable in terms of his ability to get back as quick as he did and start playing minutes and playing or starting in NBA games. But is he ever going to be the same player again? That was the worry, that guys who do their Achilles are done, they're finished, and they don't sometimes come back. He's come back, but he is a complete shell of himself. What do you make of Wes Matthews?
Ah, dear. It's a worry, and it's even more so of a worry being on this Dallas team who are struggling all around, highly likely they don't make the playoffs. So you just have to think that come the last month or two of the season, they're going to be playing the kids like Justin Anderson and Dwight Powell getting more minutes, which is going to mean less for Wes Matthews, less for Dirk. Then there'd be no need to play Chandler Parsons big minutes either. So I don't own any of those guys, but if I did, I would be I'd be fairly concerned.
Yeah. Now the thing is, if with most players, if I saw after the start six games to start the season, if I saw that they shot 45% from the field last year and they were shooting 31, I'd go, perfect, buy low opportunity. They're not going to shoot 12% worse or 13% worse from the field. It's not going to happen. But I go, okay, Wes Matthews is coming off an Achilles injury. We've never seen anyone come back and do anything off an Achilles injury. Kobe's came back after his injuries, the Achilles and the knee, and he can barely crack 40% any season. He's dropped off significantly. And Wes Matthews is not Kobe. He's never been as talented as Kobe. So I think, yeah, that's, he's not going to stay at 31%, but is he ever going to get back to 45%? I've got severe doubts that he does. And Achilles injuries, they just change people. It changes them. And while I'm not dropping him just yet, it's getting pretty bloody close where I'd want to go, you know what, this is just not happening for Wes Matthews. And there's information coming to us, or that we've seen from guys who can't recover from Achilles injuries. And that's a real concern. And that's why I'm not worried about Reggie Jackson in Detroit, because Brandon Jennings is going to come back, and he's going to come back from the Achilles injury. And A, they haven't invested money in Brandon Jennings, and B, he's going to be coming back from the injury. So I don't see him cutting into Jackson's production at all, but that's a different story. Let's talk about this trade quickly today. Matt, the Mario Chalmerses. The Miami Heat sent Mario Chalmers and James Ennis to the Memphis Grizzlies in exchange for Jarnell Stokes and Beno Udrih. Standard leagues, we obviously know we don't care. There's nothing to see here at all. But people in deeper leagues will want to know our thoughts, I think, on this, Matt. And whose value changes, if anyone's?
For me, it's not a lot.
Yep.
Beno Udrih is still going to be stuck there behind Goran Dragic. Tyler Johnson's been getting some minutes and playing some pretty good basketball. That's there, putting up some
That's what I think happens. Late. I think that Johnson. I think Johnson moves into the primary backup point guard, and Udry plays minutes behind him. I think we heard Spoelstra say today that part of the reason of the trade was is they wanted to give minutes to Tyler Johnson and to Josh Richardson, who's someone I really like. If you're in a deep league, if Josh Richardson starts getting 15 to 20 minutes a game, which is maybe not all that possible, but he's someone that I do really like. But I think that Johnson holds the primary backup point guard position for the foreseeable future, and Udry. Udry's quite good. He's a decent passer, but I'm really interested in Johnson for those deeper leagues.
Yeah, and then with Mario Chalmers, he's stuck behind Mike Conley. So once again, it's going to need an injury there for something to happen. So I don't think anything's changed with their value. If Conley does get injured, then Chalmers is probably a must-own, yep. Similar to what Udry was. But you'd probably want to be looking at 180, 200 player deep legs to be considering either of these guys.
And then Ennis moves into that just crowded wing rotation. He's going to be sitting along with Vince Carter and Jordan Adams in those bench players who hit threes who don't get playing time on a team that needs bench players to hit threes. One of many baffling coaching decisions that happen in the NBA on a daily basis, and I'm pretty sure we're going to touch on a few of them now, Matt. Let's get into these games. And if you're watching this live on YouTube, this is the portion of the show where you can watch the box scores along with me. So I'll put them up on the screen. And where are we? Just get myself sorted. There we go. Okay, let's talk about these games, Matt. Now, from a fantasy perspective, the first game of the night was the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Washington Wizards. I think I've got the wrong game up on the screen. There we go. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Washington Wizards. I'll let you take the Thunder side of things and let us know what happened there.
Yeah, as mentioned, Westbrook had a triple-double with 22, 11, and 11. Kevin Durant hurt his hamstring, I believe it was.
Yeah, hamstring.
He didn't come back after halftime. He put up 14 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, and a couple of threes in his 16 minutes in the first half. So I think I read somewhere where he's getting an MRI, so we'll probably know more in the next 24 hours. Fingers crossed it's not serious. Serge Ibaka had a pretty big game as well with 23 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 threes, 9 from 15 from the field. And then as mentioned earlier, Deion Waiters went nuts off the bench for 25 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 4 three-pointers, Enes Kanter, 9 and 6 rebounds. Steven Adams still got the start there at center with 4 and 6, but he got in foul trouble. He had 4. And that was pretty much it. Cole Singler, he came in and started for Durant in that second half, put up 8 points, 3 rebounds, 1 steal and a couple of threes. So if you're on a deeper league and Durant does miss time, then look for Waiters and Singler to pick up that scoring slack.
Yeah, Waiters is the guy that if you're looking, even if Durant misses a game, even in a standard league, if you want to stream someone in for some points, for even if it's one game, Waiters is the guy who benefits most. But Singler's a guy who does have intriguing fantasy potential. He's a really good shooter, and he can hit threes as well. So that's obviously deep, deep leagues. The Washington Wizards, wasn't a great night for the Wizards. John Wall struggled. He was 4 of 13 from the field, 9 points, 2 rebounds, 5 assists, and a couple of steals. Otto Porter went 14 and 5 with 2 steals. Marcin Gortat only played 27 minutes, but 15 and 3 with a block. And Gary Neal, who started in place of Bradley Beal, Neal played 26 minutes and had 14 points and not a lot else, and that's basically a Gary Neal type performance. Ramon Sessions went 15 and 5, while Chris Humphries started again, played 18 minutes, had 2 blocks, but we don't really need to get overly excited about Chris Humphries' fantasy potential for this season. He's still a deeper league only guy. The next game up, Matt, is the Utah Jazz and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Your boy Rudy Gobert hurt his ankle today. What else can you tell us about what happened to the Utah Jazz?
He did. Gobert had 15.7 rebounds, tied a career high with 5 assists, 6 from 10 from the field, 3 from 4 from the free throw line. Derek Favors and Gordon Hayward added 17 points apiece. Favors had 9 rebounds, 4 assists and a couple of steals. Hayward had 3 rebounds, 4 assists and a couple of steals as well. Ronnie Hood had 16 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 2 threes. So not a bad line there from Rodney Hood, doing a little bit in each category. Getting a lot of Rodney Hood questions. So he's a guy that should be owned in 12-team leagues. He's doing enough there at the moment. And Alec Burks off the bench, he top scored, had 24 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, four three-pointers and 7 from 13 from the field. He's another guy who can be owned in those 12-team leagues. And Trey Burke had 16 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, and a couple of threes as well.
I think that Alec Burks is in a perfect role. Six man is the best role for him, and he's really thriving in it. You're right, he has to be owned everywhere. So does Hood. Hood's playing really well as well. I think the presence of both of those guys limits both of their ceilings, and that's an issue there. But they're still that solid, you know, end of, or not end of your bench, sort of end of your active roster, start of your bench type level player. But the presence of both of them limits what they're able to do. If one of them goes down, if you have any other one could play 35, 36 minutes, then we're talking top 70 potential. But at the moment, I think they're sort of self-limiting each other and, you know, providing a solid floor, but a limited ceiling. Rudy Gobert also didn't block a shot, so that's a little bit of a surprise for him. And the 15 points was the first time he'd gone into double digits all season. On the Cavs, I talked about Mo Williams' big performance already. Kevin Love went 22-8 with 4 threes and 2 steals. This is not quite Minnesota Kevin Love, but it's a lot closer to Minnesota Kevin Love than what we saw last season. LeBron James, 31-7-8. He played 38 minutes, even though he was dealing with a sore leg. He had 2 steals. He shot the ball well from the field, 11 of 19. But he went 8 of 12 from the free throw line. And LeBron's free throws this season have been a real issue. He's on 61% for the season on 7.4 attempts. And that's, if you're not punting, that's a real problem. And does it get better? Look, you'd probably have to think that it does. But it's not looking good so far, is it?
No, it's not. It's really weird. Even last season, LeBron James was actually worse in free throws than Blake Griffin. And we know the talk around Blake Griffin and punting free throw percentage.
That doesn't exist anymore for Griffin, though. He's an 80% shooter this year.
Yeah, and then we get to LeBron, and it's kind of swept under the carpet a little bit. But
yep,
that's why he does become a little bit harder to own in roto leagues, because you do really got to look after that free throw percentage. So, once again, we don't think it's going to be 60% for the season, but you'd want to start seeing a little bit better numbers there in that free throw category for LeBron James.
He takes so many attempts as well. That's the problem. Tristan Thompson played 28 minutes, went 8-7 and 3 blocks. And Tristan Thompson is so unsexy to own, but he's doing exactly what you would want him to do if you did own him. 7 rebounds, 3 blocks, normally a high field goal percentage. You're not getting anything in any other areas, Matt, but if you're looking to a streamer guy in, or if you've got very specific needs, Thompson is doing that, and he is clearly the player to own at the center position in Cleveland over Timofey Mozgov, who played 19 minutes and went 3-2. And Mozgov, there is almost no reason to own him in 12-team leagues at the moment, is there?
No, there's not.
You can't deal with the minutes he's getting. And this carries on from last season when everyone was very, very hyped when Mozgov got traded to Cleveland. But he played less minutes than Tristan Thompson all season. Even as a starter, he played less minutes for the Cavs, and it's even gone to another degree this season. J.R. Smith returned. He played 22 minutes and scored 7 points with 3 assists. It is very hard to justify owning him. He's been poor this season so far. Obviously, he's been injured. He's back now, so if you did hold him, let's just wait another game or two. But if he's going to play mid-20 minutes and not do anything, there are other players out there who can play mid-20 minutes and not do anything for you. The New York Knicks and the Toronto Raptors. Matt, you can take the Knicks side of things and let us know what happened there.
Yeah, Carmelo Anthony had 25 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, 2 threes, 10 from 23 from the field. Robin Lopez had 12, 8, a steal, 4 blocks, 6 from 11 from the field in 29 minutes. So that's a perfect Robin Lopez line. Jose Calderon, 8 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists and a steal. Still no reason to be owning him. Kristaps Porzingis had 8 points, 6 rebounds, an assist, another big putback dunk as well, 3 from 11 from the field. Porzingis has got to go straight to the dunk contest, doesn't he, Josh?
Yeah, as long as all they do in the dunk contest is putbacks.
And off the bench, we had Langston Galloway. He's been very, very good so far this season. Under the radar, doesn't get a lot of recognition. There's really no name value there. But if Langston Galloway is available in like a 12-team league, should seriously consider him. He had 15 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, couple of threes. Lance Thomas, out of nowhere, had 17 points and 3 threes. Jerry and Grant, the one who there with a bit of name value, and eventually should take that starting point guard role. He had 4 points and four assists in 18 minutes.
Do you think he would eventually take that point guard role? But the last two games, Calderon's played 29 and 30-plus minutes, which is it's pretty much inexcusable. And look, I'm going to give Derek Fisher a slight pass until we see what happens with Aaron Aflalo. But the fact that Calderon's getting 30 minutes a night and Saša Vučić is still getting 20 minutes a night is reprehensible in today's NBA. When Aflalo comes back, if Vučić is not playing 0 minutes, it's a mistake. He shouldn't be playing this many minutes. Galloway should be playing 32. Grant should be playing 27. Calderon should be playing 20. And Cle'Anthony Early should be picking up the rest of the minutes there. Not this bullshit of Lance Thomas playing minutes, of Jose Calderon playing 30, of Vučić, who is... Now, last year, Matt, Jakar Sampson was the worst player in the NBA. Saša Vučić is the worst player in the NBA. Who is worse than him? And he's starting and getting minutes. He is atrocious. He offers nothing. What's the reason for him to be there?
I don't know.
He couldn't play in the NBA for the last 4 years. He wasn't good enough to play. And he comes back, you know what, you haven't played for 4 years, why don't you start ahead of some guys who proved themselves to a degree last year in Galloway, or a guy with much more potential and who has actually played better than you this year in Grant. And Calderon and Vučić are just, they're just sucking minutes out of, I don't even know. And Fisher's not the worst coach in the NBA. That's the problem, is that he's doing this and there are other people doing more morally reprehensible things than what he is doing at the moment. If you own Kylo Quinn in a 12-team league, I don't think you really need to. Look, he played 12 minutes, and 6-6 and two blocks is nice, but 12 minutes is really hard to stomach for 12-team leagues. And Jerry and Grant, if they continue to give him 18 minutes, then stashing him becomes harder to do. For the Raptors, Kyle Lowry continues on his great form, 23-7-9, three steals, a block, two threes. DeMar DeRozan went 29-5 with a steal, so big nights from both of those guys. There was no Damari Carroll out with that plantar fasciitis again. Terrence Ross is also out for the next 2 weeks with a sprained left thumb. So there was more minutes for Corey Joseph. He played 27 and went 12-6-8. And Dwayne Casey has shown that he wants to give him big minutes. Casey came out in the media and said that he wants to find a way to get Joseph more minutes. And it happened here. And I don't think we need to look at him in necessarily standard leagues, but deeper leagues and DFS situations, there's going to be more minutes and more opportunities for Joseph moving forward. James Johnson got another start. He goes from not playing at all to starting and playing 29 minutes. 7-3-3, and this is a typical James Johnson night. A steal and three blocks. Defensive stats, stream him in if Carroll is not playing. I'd still probably rather have Joseph, though, because I think that he's more likely to have a bigger impact, but that obviously remains to be seen. Luis Scola, 11-7 in 22 minutes. Not a bad night from him. And 16-9 from Jonas Valanciunas with his usual efficiency and his usual lack of other numbers. Not really much else to talk about here. Anthony Bennett got on the court for 17 minutes, so that's good if you're an Anthony Bennett fan, if there are any of those that are alive. The next game, speaking of reprehensible coaching, the Los Angeles Lakers and the Miami Heat. Do you want to take the Lakers, Matt?
Yeah, sure. There's lots to talk about here because Meta World Peace hit four threes.
He's back.
Okay. Yeah, 14 points and a steal and two blocks. And he top scored out of the starting five. Jordan Clarkson had 12 points, two rebounds, two steals. And then listen to this, Josh. D'Angelo Russell had 4 points, four rebounds, and four assists in 21 minutes. Roy Hibbert had 2 points, two rebounds, and three blocks in 24 minutes. And Julius Randle had 7-7 and four assists in 25 minutes.
How is Bobby Scott coaching? How did he have a job?
I don't know. Once again, him and Derek Fisher should maybe just switch teams or something.
Yeah, they should. They should stop coaching. I don't care what they do in their personal life.
And this was without Kobe. And
you think they'd get better without Kobe?
21 minutes. So their two young guns played 46 minutes between them.
Yeah, it is insanity to me. The fact that, you know what? Okay, let me start off with this. Kobe's going to play back-to-backs. Now, we're going to look to play Kobe every game. It's his last season. He's going to play every game. Oh, Kobe's going to play back-to-backs. Yeah, he's going to play. But by the way, no, he's not playing today. He's going to sit out the first game of his back-to-back. And then later on it comes out, you know what? He might not play tomorrow, the second half of a back-to-back, after sitting out the first half of a back-to-back. So basically we went from, yeah, he's playing every game. Yes, he's playing back-to-backs. No, he's missing the first one. To now he's missing both of them. Make up your mind. Work out what's going on. And then if Kobe's out, don't give the minutes to Meta World Peace. Give him to Anthony Brown, who's a guy that is there, an actual small forward who is worth developing. Give Clarkson minutes. Give D'Angelo Russell minutes. None of this other just bullshit that they're running out there. It is. I love that they gave Larry Nance 20 minutes. I like that a lot. But why is Julius Randle getting 26 minutes? I'm not the greatest Julius Randle fan, and he's going to have bad games. But come on, why is Nick Young playing 26 minutes? And the thing is that, okay, Nick Young's out there. Byron Scott hates Nick Young. He hated him last season. He just refused to play him. So you know what Byron Scott's thought process is, Matt? Oh, our guards got better. We got better players in. Let's play the guy who I hated when the team was worse. You can't make this shit up. When the team was worse, Nick Young was one of their better players. I'm not playing him. The team's better. There's more young players. Oh, let's play him now. He is a certified dickhead. It makes no sense, these rotations. How he has a job is beyond me. If the Lakers, look, unless, you know what, unless Kupchak's gone, we need to be the worst team possible without outlandishly tanking. Let's find the worst coach we can get so we can keep our draft pick, because that's what's going to happen. And they are an abomination.
And last season, he didn't want them shooting threes because shooting three-pointers doesn't win you championships, Golden State Warriors. But then World Peace and Nick Young are going 9 from 13 from deep.
And last season, he didn't want Jeremy Lin. He didn't want to run pick and rolls. He didn't want Jeremy Lin running them because even that thing that Jeremy Lin excels at. And this season, what he's saying is we need to run more pick and rolls. We need to get these guys, and we're going to limit D'Angelo Russell's minutes because he's not playing well in pick and roll. Like, you didn't want to run them last year. Just be stupid, but make up your mind and be stupid in one area. Don't be contradictory stupid, because that's the worst kind of stupid. And he needs to go. This is, it's an embarrassment for a team who is as good as what they've been historically to see some of these names out there, and just to see, look, World Peace and Saša Vučić, it's embarrassing. There's nothing to like from this game from a fantasy perspective. But I'll say this, Matt, Jordan Clarkson's been dropped in a lot of leagues. I would be making sure I picked him up. D'Angelo Russell, and not so much.
Yeah, and Kobe Bryant was even dropped in one of our main head-to-head legs by our good mate Seth. He's like, no, had enough, Kobe, you're gone.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. In certain situations, he's going to have no trade value, and he's going to hurt your team more than help it. For some people who are punting field goals, then yes, he's going to have value, but in a situation where you're not, he's hurting more than he's helping, and I'm okay with that. Anything else you want to talk about on the Lakers before we move on to the Heat?
I didn't want to talk about the Lakers in the first place, so cool. That's 10 minutes wasted.
Hassan Whiteside, 19 and 15 with 3 blocks. He continues to be an animal. Chris Bosh had his best game, and it's against the Lakers, so that's understandable. 30 and 11 for Bosh. Well, best scoring game anyway. 2 threes, but not much else. Justice Winslow continues to get big minutes, continues to do very little with them as an overall season-long perspective. 8-3-3 with a steal and a block. But at his low DFS salary, he's doing enough in those additional categories to give you value there. Tyler Johnson, who we touched on earlier, 29 minutes for him. 9-2-2, a steal and 2 blocks. So getting the minutes, and that's good to see. Dwayne Wade, not much from him. 25 minutes for 12 points and 6 assists. And Dragic, we touched on here, he was poor. Josh Richardson played 15 minutes. Didn't show a lot, but I'm going to be really interested to see how they do work him, because he was a guy that they said they wanted to get extra run into. And Luol Deng played 30 minutes, went 14-4-4 with 3 threes and 3 steals. If you're ever selling high on Luol Deng, it's now, because he couldn't even break double digits the last 4 or 5 games before that. And that's what playing the Lakers can do. It can play anyone into form. Gerald Green is also suspended for the next 2 games. That's including this one and the next game for conduct detrimental to the team. We don't know exactly what happened, but it is clearly one of the more bizarre situations in the NBA. It appears it's not drug related, but it's definitely weird as to what happened with Gerald Green.
But this is, he got suspended for 2 games, and I'm guessing this is related to him being in hospital recently?
Yes. Yep, it was for that. From what I've pieced together, little bits of it, he had to be strapped down onto an ambulance stretcher. He was bleeding all over the place. He was aggressive and swinging punches at teammates. They had to restrain him, and basically just sort of lost his shit, and we don't really know why. And he had running in, I think I heard he was running into things and banging his head on stuff, and he was bleeding all over the place, but apparently not drug related. So don't know what happened. It's a very, very weird situation, and it doesn't look like we're going to get much clarity with it, apart from the fact that he's suspended and it isn't drug related. So we'll see if anything further comes of that. Matt, we've got another one to talk about now. Speaking of annoying coaching situations, the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks. You can talk about what happened in Boston.
Thank you. Isaiah Thomas had 20 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 1 from 10 from 3, 6 from 20 from the field, usual efficiency from the free throw line, 7 from 8 there. After that, it was a bit of a mess. Jay Crowder had 12 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 steals, and I believe he's leading the league in that category.
I don't have it in front of me. I'm just opening up. He'd be over 3.5 steals a game. Does that sound about right? What's he at?
Yeah.
3.2.
He's been very good. Yeah, so he's another guy who 12-team leagues probably should be owned just for that fact alone.
Yep.
Jared Sullinger started at center again. He had 11 and 10 with a steal, a block, and a 3. Amir Johnson went 4 points, 9 rebounds. Avery Bradley started, scored 2 points, 3 rebounds in 18 minutes. And then off the bench, we had Evan Turner go 13, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, and 4 steals. Kelly Olynyk had 11 points. David Lee had 13 points. RJ Hunter had 7 and 7 rebounds. And Jurebko had 6 and 3. And just getting to this front court situation, I was tweeting about this today, but Jared Sullinger, 20 minutes, Amir Johnson, 23 minutes, Kelly Olynyk, 22 minutes, and David Lee, 21 minutes. Absolute timeshare, the epitome of a timeshare. It's so hard to own any of these guys. If you want to own one, it's Jared Sullinger with his upside, but it's just super difficult and so frustrating.
I'm probably going to say it in every single show, but Jared Sullinger and Kelly Olynyk are the best two fantasy players on this team. If you had to have a guess where what Jared Sullinger's 9 category ranking is on Basketball Monster at the moment, what would you guess it's at?
I know it's actually pretty high. Someone told me this the other day, so I'm going to say it'll be top 30.
Yeah, he's
top 35.
25th. And it's because he's averaging 11.5, 7.8. He's got a triple 1.2. He's shooting 54% from the field and 67% from the free throw line. On only half an attempt a game. He's only turning the ball over once a game as well in 21 minutes. His per 36 numbers are out of control. 19 and 13, 2 threes, 2 steals, 2 blocks. He's putting up numbers, but of course, Brad Stevens, we've got to make sure we play 20 minutes to each of these guys. David Lee has no part in the future of this team. Sullinger, Olynyk, Johnson, 32 minutes each. Done, bang, forget about it. There you go, Brad. I've solved the problem for you. Just do it. He's not going to, because he's clearly not listening to this podcast. But stop playing these guys 20 minutes. Jurebko's nice, but he doesn't need to have 15 minutes. David Lee doesn't need 21 minutes. And look, he had a good game here, but he's been pitiful in the games before that. It's just an extremely... Like, I own Sullinger in a couple of 12-team leagues. I don't own any of these other guys, though, and I can't see how you can. Where are we? The Milwaukee Bucks. Jabari Parker... It's odd the way they're running Jabari Parker as well. Okay, so we'll get him back. He's likely going to sit back-to-backs. He played, and then on us straight away, let's play him in the back-to-back. Okay, cool. That's fine. So that's going to be the way it moves forward, is it? Yeah, no worries. And then, 5 days later, back-to-back, are we going to sit him in the second one? And then they say that's all part of the plan. What's the plan to when he first comes back to play a back-to-back and then 5 days later not? It seems like some ass-backwards medical advice there, but... Hey, it is what it is. At least we know that Parker's not playing tomorrow. When we get onto the Minnesota Timberwolves later on, you'll find out why that's so frustrating. 8 for Parker in 24 minutes with 2 steals. That's probably his best game since returning. Are you adding him in standard leagues?
Probably not adding him because he may not even be available. I don't think he is available, but if I'm owning him, I'm holding him. He's a long-term prospect for me. He's one of these guys in the last sort of 6 to 8 weeks of the season can really help you win a championship there. But if he is available, then once again, it probably depends who you're dropping. There's a lot of teams already who have like really good lineups, and it's even difficult right now to say, that guy shouldn't be on a roster.
There's lots of teams whose worst player is Evan Fournier and Kent Bazemore at the moment, and that's their worst player. Exactly. And those guys are top 100 players. There's a lot of teams like that.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, they've added these guys. You know, you drafted Mo Williams late. Now he's playing well. You might have picked up Jared Sullinger. You picked up Ish Smith, and now he's playing well. You picked up TJ McConnell to stream him in, and now he's just doing enough. So there's a lot of these guys who are doing enough for your team right now, and it's hard to drop them. So once again, it depends on where you're at. If you're looking long-term, then Jabari Parker's an awesome option. If you're playing more for the next 2-3 weeks, you might want to stay clear of him.
And the reason is, well, you're right, that if there was a guy out there who's a top 50 or top 40 guy, you would add him and take the short-term hit. But Parker's not necessarily. He might be a top 100 guy at best. He might be a top 80 guy at best. And it's not worth necessarily risking a couple of weeks of production just to get a top 80 guy, or dropping one of your guys who's already top 80. Like, if I had Fournier and a guy such as, say Mike Conley was dropped on the waiver wire, right? And I went, okay, my worst player is Evan Fournier. And then I would drop Fournier and grab Conley, even if he was coming back off an injury and really struggling, because I know that he's going to be that top level player.
Yeah, Danny Green.
Yeah, if Danny Green was there, okay, you know what, I'll take the hit on that for a few weeks, let him get sorted out, and he'll be a top 50 guy most likely. I'll take, if Marcin Gortat was dropped, I'll take the hit and I'll get Marcin Gortat, and you know, I might lose a little bit, but he's going to be better in the long term. But Parker's not a guy where I think that he's going to be that top 50 guy, so I'm not, you know, sacrificing what I've got now for the hopes of something that in all likelihood is not going to develop. There was no Michael Carter-Williams again, so Tyler Ennis got the start. He's not worth looking at. 4-2 for him. Jared Bayless continues to get big minutes. 30 minutes off the bench, 12-2-2 with 3 steals and 2 threes. He remains an awesome DFS player. Still probably not looking at him in seasonal leagues. Carter-Williams is probably not going to play the next game as well, so Bayless is going to continue to get those minutes. And he'll likely get minutes until OJ Mayo comes back as well, because he can play some 2. So he's not a horrible option, but we talk about guys with not much long-term value. I don't think he's one of those guys. Greg Monroe, 17-14 with a steal and a block. A good night from him. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, one of his quieter nights. He battled foul trouble. He had 5 fouls in his 24 minutes, went 16-3 with a couple of steals and a three-pointer. But not a horrible night from Giannis. Not much else to really talk about from the Bucks, except Jason Kidd, he detests John Henson. Detests him. And that's why that game, and this is again, well, sometimes it's so hard to explain what happens with coaches. John Henson in the first game of the season played 10 minutes and then had Achilles soreness and missed, you know, 6 games. The game back from Achilles soreness, he went out there and went 22-5 with 3 blocks. And you go, yes, rub your hands together. It's John Henson. He's unleashed. Jason Kidd believes again. He's back. The 10 minutes must have been due to Achilles soreness. And the next 2 games, he's played less than 10 minutes. If anyone can explain that to me, I would love an explanation, because it makes zero sense. Why does he hate him, and what's going on? You probably don't know the answer to that, I'm guessing.
I've got no idea.
But he does hate him. You can't own Henson in 12 team leagues if he's going to get 10 minutes a night. And out of 3 of the 4 games he's played, that's what he's getting. So I can't see how you can own him. Can you justify owning him in a standard league?
Not even close. And this is why, you know, you let one big game go by and people ask, oh, John Henson, do I need to pick him up? And we'll just say, just let's see if this is going to be a trend and he can actually get 25 minutes in 3 or 4 consecutive games, because we know from past experiences that it's highly unlikely. And once again, this proved the point. So there's no reason to be owning John Henson in 10 and 12 and probably even some 14 team leagues.
I had a question come through on Twitter here, Matt. I don't know if you've saw, and this is bizarre to me. It's from Hoops on Twitter at Friedel_P, and he's listening to the podcast now. He says, I tried to sell high Sullinger. I added Valanciunas, so Sullinger and Valanciunas, for Serge Ibaka, and the Ibaka owner is okay. Should I go ahead with it? So he's trading Sullinger and Valanciunas for Serge Ibaka. How quickly do you say yes?
Yes.
Yeah. You have to, yeah. So, Friedel_P, if you're listening, you're taking Ibaka back very quickly before that guy changes his mind. That's the epitome of selling high, and I love it. It's a pretty good deal. If you can get it done, it looks like you are going to get it done. The Dallas Mavericks, go ahead.
I heard something similar as well last night on Twitter. Someone said they got offered Marc Gasol and they wanted Al Jefferson and Ryan Anderson.
Really? Okay, yep.
Once again, that's buying low on Marc Gasol and selling high on Jefferson and Ryan Anderson. So that was another great two-for-one deal.
Yeah, definitely. You can get – this is the perfect time to really get into those people who are panicking. And, yeah, there's some value to be had out there from some people who aren't really valuing things probably as they should. The Dallas Mavericks and the New Orleans Pelicans, we've touched on this game a little bit, Matt, but do you want to touch on what's happened with Dallas? I'll preface this by saying this game was probably not indicative of a lot.
No, it wasn't. Dirk Nowitzki had 18 points and 4 rebounds and a 3. Zaza Pachulia had 12 points, 5 rebounds and a couple of steals. Not a bad sort of center option there if you're looking for some extra steals, but that's about all. Deron Williams had 8 points and 3 rebounds. Chandler Parsons had 3 points and 6 rebounds. He just played 16 minutes. Charlie Villanueva, 15 points, 9 rebounds, couple of assists, 1 block and 1 3. Off the bench, JJ Barea went 10 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. Justin Anderson in the blowout had 11 points and a couple of rebounds. And Dwight Powell, 10 and 6 with a block and 4 from 5 from the field. So he's another guy who sort of people have picked up over the past week, starting to get some minutes there in Dallas and putting up, you know, reasonable numbers. Once again, just doing enough where he can be owned in 12-team leagues.
Yeah, he's got tremendous potential to me. It's only his second season. I really like what Dwight Powell is able to do. An injury would be massive for his value because he put up big numbers. Pachulia is, he's not getting huge minutes, but Pachulia is, you know, being real serviceable as their center. And he's ranked inside the top 100 in 25 minutes a game. He's at 9.5 rebounds, a steal a game. His field goal percentage would want to come up, but he's putting up some numbers. So it's not like Powell is probably going to take that role anytime soon, but he's going to play a pretty steady 25 minutes a night, I think, and he has significant value if he can keep that and to keep it going up as well, which would be really interesting for him. On the Pelican side of things, Anthony Davis did leave with that hip issue. He did have a scan on it. It came back negative, so that's good. But Anthony Davis is not what we'd call the quickest guy to heal from things, or the most robust player in terms of injury recovery. So the chances of him playing tomorrow appear slim. 17 and 7 for him, and a steal and a block in the first half. So he was online to putting up just huge, huge numbers, which, yeah, I might have had more of a chance of cashing in Moneyball today because I, along with many others, had him in my lineup. Ryan Anderson took advantage of no Anthony Davis, 25 and 11 with a couple of threes. So a good night from him. Jrue Holiday, we touched on earlier, yeah, much less than what his minutes limit actually was. 15 minutes, 10 points, 3 assists and 2 steals. So that increases the chance that he plays on Wednesday. Eric Gordon has had a really good start to this season, and some of that's to do with the absence of Tyreek and the limited nature of Jrue Holiday, but he's putting up some really good numbers. 17.7, 3 threes a game, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal. The field goal percentage is low. Yes, he's taking a lot of shots. I really like what Eric Gordon's doing. He's a potential sell high guy though, but I feel that not many people actually like Eric Gordon or actually think that he's a decent player despite the numbers he's putting up. What's your take on what Gordon's doing? Are you selling high? Do you think he can maintain this top 60 value?
I'd be selling high. A, I don't think he'll continue that value for the rest of the season, and B, just so injury prone, so I don't trust him season long. I don't trust Ryan Anderson season long.
No.
So they're two guys who, if you can get top 50, top 60 value back in return, that's an easy deal for me.
I've got him in a couple of leagues, Eric Gordon. I was pretty high on him in the off season. I thought that his three-pointers, we had him projected at a massive amount of three-pointers at the start of the season, and a lot of people were questioning it, thinking, like, what are you doing? Why is Eric Gordon projected so many three-pointers? He's currently exceeding that rate at the moment, which is great, but I don't think he maintains this top 60 value. The problem is I don't think anyone buys a top 60 value, so selling high is going to be pretty difficult, I think, to get that sort of value back. Tony Douglas hit 5 threes for 17 points. He's really only a deeper league option, I'd say. And Omer Asik returned from his calf injury. Played 16 minutes, 2 and 5, and a block. He is not a guy you need to must add in any sort of format. Luke Babbitt started 24 minutes, 7 rebounds. Nothing too exciting from Babbitt there. The next game is the Charlotte Hornets and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Matt, you can talk Charlotte Hornets and the fact that Jeremy Lamb is the greatest shooter of all time.
Sure. And Nicholas Batum had 17 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks, 3 threes. continued his fine season or start for the season. Kemba Walker, 10 points, 6 assists, couple of steals there. Al Jefferson had 9 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists and a block. Marvin Williams, another guy who people have picked up and once again is just doing enough. 7 points, 10 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks and a 3. You take that line. And then, yeah, Jeremy Lin, Cody Zeller and Jeremy Lamb were the guys off the bench. Lin had 19 points, 3 assists and a 3. Cody Zeller had 14 points, 6 rebounds and a couple of steals. And Jeremy Lamb had 18 points, 4 rebounds, 1 steal, a couple of threes and 8 from 10 from the field. So for me, more of a streaming option. I just don't trust him, a little bit too inconsistent. And apart from points, doesn't give you a real lot. A couple of threes there, but in terms of rebounds, assists and steals, doesn't quite do enough for me to be owning Jeremy Lamb sort of, you know, over the course of a week or two.
Yeah, look, this is, I've said it so many times, is everyone's like, oh my God, we've got to add Jeremy Lamb. And they go, well, that's great if you think he's going to shoot 90% every game. And he's had a couple of games where he's shooting out of control. He's at 59% on the season. And when you look at his last three seasons, 35%, 43%, 42%, he's not a 59% shooter. He's not going to be this red hot. And we saw it a couple of games in between here. When the shooting wasn't there, he offers nothing. So I'm not, he's so boom or bust. I'm not looking to add him in 12-team leagues. There's no way it's sustainable for him to be this red hot of a shooter. It's just not going to continue. I maintain that Cody Zeller should be playing minutes over Marvin Williams. He's producing in 24 minutes a game and putting up pretty decent numbers, and it just pisses me off that he doesn't get minutes over Williams. But he's still providing okay value for 14-team leagues anyway. The Minnesota Timberwolves, Matt. Well, now, the Lakers are terrible. The Knicks are annoying. Is there anyone more frustrating than Sam Mitchell?
No, and largely because of Gorgui Dieng.
There's so much to it. Okay, Gorgui Dieng is ridiculous. The fact that they only play him as a backup to Karl Anthony Towns and won't play him alongside Towns is ludicrous to me. It makes no sense. You know who's a shit basketballer? Adrian Payne. So why is he playing 20 minutes next to Towns? Surely, Dieng. This is the opportunity for Dieng to play. Now, we saw Kevin Garnett sit and it's a back-to-back. That's fine. Garnett offers nothing anyway. But then we had Andrew Wiggins, you know, out before the game. Oh, he's got a sore knee. Like, what? Where did this come from? Oh, yeah, he had a hard fall and hurt his knee. Oh, diddums. So Wiggins sat this one out. And then we had about literally 1 minute before the game started. Oh, by the way, Ricky Rubio is not playing. He's got a sore knee, like out of nowhere. So that's screwed with so many people's daily fantasy lineups. Out of nowhere, this sort of stuff happened. So we went, okay, Garnett's out. So Bielitsa's going to start. Is he? Nah, Gorgui Dieng will start. That's great. Nah, it's Adrian Payne, a guy who's provided nothing, basically, at all. Why is he starting, and why is he playing 20 minutes, and why is Dieng playing less than him? Matt, we've been on the hold-on-to Gorgui Dieng bandwagon. It appears that this is a Jason Kidd-John Henson situation at the moment with Dieng. What do you make of it?
Yeah, this is the last straw for me. I've been pretty firm with people about holding Dieng. I still think he's got some season-long value, but after today, like I said, I thought as soon as we saw KG was out, it had to be Bielitsa or Dieng. In comes Adrian Payne right over the top of them. So, unfortunately, it looks like Dieng's got to go. Just there's no value there right at the moment. The minutes aren't there. Who knows what's going to happen for the rest of the season, but there's just too much value around. And if you have held Dieng, which once again I've been suggesting you do, then unfortunately you've missed out on some of these other talent like Bielitsa or maybe like a Fournier or Marvin Williams or some of these other guys we've mentioned. But yeah, unfortunately, time to go for Dieng. And if you're dropping him, don't just then go and pick up an Amir Johnson or a David Lee or someone crap. If there's no one you want, just please stream through that position. Just don't pick up crap for the sake of picking up crap. It's worthless. Just stream through that position. Get Ish Smith for the back-to-back. Get someone else who plays in the back-to-back in, you know, over the weekend or whatever it might be. Just if there's no one there who you think is going to do a decent job for the next 7 to 10 days, just stream the position.
What do you make of Nemanja Bjelica? Do you believe?
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah, someone tweeted that at me today, so I had to use it.
I do now. I wasn't convinced at the start of the season. I was on the Dieng bandwagon. I thought he'd be getting the majority of the minutes there. But once again, the scoring, the minutes, the three-pointers there off the bench.
Let's ease up a bit on the scoring. He's averaging 9 points in 29 minutes. He's not
lighting it up. What's he averaging in this couple, two or three games?
He's not lighting it up. Let's all have a look.
He's not lighting it up, but it's doable.
He's been in double digits. He's been in double digits the last three. So no, he's definitely picked it up.
Yeah.
And that's because he's shooting. He's shooting at 56, 60, and 57 in those three games, and that's not sustainable. He's not a 57% shooter as a European stretch four guy. No one is a stretch four who shoots 57% and just takes all these threes. He's taken. I tell you what his numbers are the last three games, and this inflates his value a bit. 3 of 5 from three. 3 of 5 from 3, 2 of 6 from three.
Yep.
That's not sustainable. He shot 60% from three the last two games, and that's made the fact that his scoring looks so high on, you know, look, that's great, double digits, but he's not going to shoot 60% from three. So he's barely got over double digits while he's hitting the threes like that, and that is bound to come down because he's a perimeter guy. He's not an interior sort of player. So there is going to be some regression there. So he's currently ranked 82nd in 9-cat value. I don't think that he stays at that level. I think that, yeah, you can own him in 12-team leagues, but he's averaging 5.6 field goal attempts in 27 minutes. There's not much there. Yes, he's contributing little bits in other categories, but to me, he doesn't have great upside. I see a lot of people, oh, he's young, he's got upside. He's not young. He's 27 years old. He's not a young player. He's adjusting to the game, and there's still be a bit of growth, but he's not young. He's basically in his peak years, and he'll improve a bit, but I don't see him being, you know, this great upside guy. Get him and stash him. He's going to be a top 50 guy. I think he's just going to be this solid guy who's probably going to end the season around 100, 110 sort of level. That would be my guess because, yeah, this three-point shooting has to regress.
Yeah, that's fair. Understand all that. And it's the 17 points, 11 points, 13 points. The assists as well, 5, 4, and 4 in his last
game. That's really nice.
And in a five-game week, Ben... Yeah, he definitely needs to be owned. Use him. End of the week, if he's crap, bang, drop him.
Yep.
This guy, in you go, and then do a jog. Or once again, if there's crap around, please just use the schedule and stream through that position. Just maximize your games in the daily transaction head-to-head leagues.
Yep, exactly. And you said, look, he has to be owned everywhere, but just don't expect the world from him. Expect some of this to come back. He just doesn't get – his usage is not high. Some of these numbers are going to come back to earth a little bit, and that's fine. Zach LaVine started in place of Ricky Rubio, 25-8 with 2 steals and a 3. Do not add Zach LaVine on the back of this game. He had 8 turnovers. He's not a point guard. Yes, he racked up stats. The Timberwolves got beaten after a couple of solid victories in a row. The team is subjectively worse when LaVine is playing minutes at point guard, and I don't think there's anyone that can really doubt that despite his fantasy production. And that, I was going to say, if they had a competent coach, that would mean that wouldn't happen. But unfortunately, Sam Mitchell's in charge here. So that means he might play some more point guard, which is really disappointing for the actual development of this team. But he will be able to rack up some fantasy stats. I'm not adding him anywhere based on this, though. Matt, we are done with the review of Tuesday's game. We're going to have a short break, mainly so we can get Bryce Whitney's band, the song, up on the podcast, so people can sing along. Hopefully, I won't sing along this time. You grab yourself some water, and then we'll be back to discuss Wednesday's slate. I saw your picture today. Thank you, Bryce. And if anyone wants to listen to that song in its entirety or download any of Bryce's music and his band Columbia, that the links to that are in the show notes, which you can obviously check out on redrockbasketball.com. Or if you're listening to this on hardwoodparoxysm.com, the show notes are posted over there as well. Matt, let's talk Wednesday. There's 11 games on the slate. We have got spreads for all of them, apart from the first game, which is the aforementioned Los Angeles Lakers against the Orlando Magic. And the reason there is no spread for this one is because we do not know the status of Nikola Vucevic. Vucevic has missed the last couple of games with a knee bruise. It appears doubtful that he is going to play in this one. Jason Smith is also doubtful. So the Orlando big men are going to take a hit. What that means is Dwayne Dedmon he's a really useful fantasy performer. He's been putting up some pretty nice numbers. Nothing too spectacular, but enough that he's returning fantasy value. And I think he's one of the best value big men on the board. How are you seeing this game from Dedmon? Or have you heard anything to the contrary about Vucevic? Do you think there's a chance that he plays?
No, I haven't heard anything. So I'll be waiting. We're lucky that this is one of the first games on the slate. So we should get news of Vucevic before tip off. As you said, if he doesn't play, Dedmon comes in. $4,200 on Moneyball. Great play at the center. So we know that Kobe's definitely out. Is that correct?
No, I've got Kobe listed as doubtful at the moment, and much like I've got Vucevic and Smith. And the official definitions of doubtful, probable, and questionable. Probable is 75% chance that they play. Questionable is 50-50, and doubtful is 25% chance that they play. So I've got Kobe down as a 25% guy.
Yeah, so if he doesn't play, then probably Lou Williams comes into calculations. I still like Evan Fournier at $5,200 here on Moneyball. He's still one of the better plays. Yeah, that's probably about all. Pass on Roy Hibbert, pass on Julius Randle. I can't take any of the Lakers at all. Apart from Lou Williams, I can't take any of the Lakers.
I think, I've just had this idea now. I reckon we'll do, when you reference players, you reference the Moneyball salary. So you cater to our Australian listeners, and I'll reference the FanDuel salary when I'm talking about guys. They're pretty similar, but there's a little bit of difference. One guy I do like from the Lakers' point of view, though, is Nick Young. He's priced at $3,600. He put up 25.4 points today. He's averaging over the last five only 13, but at minimum salary and with a bigger opportunity here and with Byron Scott likely to do whatever is the wrong thing to do, Young will probably get out there and play some more. He's a decent guy in tournaments because he can go six, seven times value at that price, and that's decent. I also don't hate Julius Randle from the Lakers at $5,900. Yes, again, he was disappointing today, but the Magic are playing generally at a pretty high pace in a lot of their games. And that makes, hopefully, for some pretty decent numbers for some of these guys. Yeah, Fournier remains an interesting option. Oladipo is probably a little bit too highly priced at the present time for me. He's only averaging 30.8 points on FanDuel at the moment. That's what he's averaging over the last five games. So he's dropped off a little bit after a red-hot start to the season. And Toby Harris is too fluctuable to use given the way Skiles runs those rotations. The next game is the New York Knicks and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets are favored by 5. We've got an unfavorable total of 196 in this game. Aaron Aflalo, still yet to make his season debut for the Knicks. He is questionable for this game. PJ Hairston is considered probable with a migraine. Hairston doesn't have really much impact from daily fantasy point of view or seasonal leagues for that matter. Aflalo means that we don't know what impact a flyer is going to have, but it means that we steer clear of the guards because we don't know what it's going to mean for Galloway or Grant or Calderon or Vucic. We just don't know how that's going to play out with a flyer there. The best value guy on the board in this game to me is Marvin Williams in Charlotte. He's at 5,000 and he's been putting up just relatively consistent numbers, averaging for the season 25.8, and at 5,000, that's basically what you need to do. So I do like Marvin Williams here, and even his backup Cody Zeller is at $3,900. He's a nice tournament guy, that $3,900, who can put up 25, 26 points to really give you a bit of a boost in that situation. Who else do you like in this one, Matt?
Yeah, I love Marvin Williams as well. Also, don't mind Porzingis. He's at 5'6 on Moneyball at that power forward position. Nicholas Batum's been pretty good. He's starting to creep up there. His price is now $6,900, averaging 28 points. Kemba Walker's at 7-4, probably pass on that.
That's too high.
And if you think the game's going to be a blowout, guys like Jeremy Lin or Jeremy Lamb again, $4,300 for Lamb if you think he can continue scoring off the bench.
Another guy who I think is not a bad guy to look at is Robin Lopez, who started the season off struggling. He's averaging almost 24 a game in his last five, and at $4,600, that's not a bad price. He put up 34 in his last game, and that's not even his highest score in those last five games. So he's been putting up some pretty decent numbers of late. Feeling a little bit more comfortable in this situation. So at 4,600, he's not a bad guy as well. The rest of the players, Carmelo at 9,400, I don't reckon he's a great option, although he has had a history of destroying Charlotte, so bear that in mind. I think he had a 60-point game against the then Bobcats a couple of years ago. in Charlotte, and he's in Charlotte. Oh, no, was that might have been New York, actually. But it was regardless. It was against Charlotte. So there's some interest there for me with him in certain situations, but to me it's not a guy where I've got to go out and grab Carmelo in that situation. The Toronto Raptors and the Philadelphia 76ers, there's massive blowout potential here. The Sixers haven't won a game yet. The Raptors are favored by 9.5, and we have a really low total, 192.5. And there's a couple of key injuries in this one as well. Damari Carroll is questionable with plantar fasciitis, and Nerlens Noel is considered questionable with sore wrists bilaterally. He's got both of his wrists are sore. Don't really know exactly what's going on with Noel. Who benefits the most if Carroll is out, and who benefits the most if Noel is out?
If Noel is out, then that Rashawn, what's his name?
Yeah, Rashawn Holmes.
Holmes?
Yep.
He could get the start again. He's a cheap $3,500. And who was the other guy you mentioned?
Damari Carroll.
Then we look at someone like James Johnson, once again, $3,500 to get them a start. Hollis Thompson off the bench, 3-9. Jeremy Grant is probably the guy there in Philly who gets the biggest boost with Noel out, still starting, but $4,300. Don't mind TJ McConnell at 4-4. And that's probably about it, I think, for me. But yeah, I'd be concerned that this game will be over halfway through the third quarter.
Now, I think Jahlil Okafor is in for a big game if Noel is out as well. I agree with what you said about Holmes as a cheap option, but Okafor's 6,400 on FanDuel. He put up 43.5 in the last game, which is without Noel. I think that he is in line for a big game as well, and a game where his percentages won't hurt you. Corey Joseph at 3,700 is a guy that I really like at that price. He put up 32 points today. He's averaging almost 20 points in his last five. And again, without Carroll, he has slightly bigger role. And Dwayne Casey wanted to get him a bigger role. At 3,700, I like him. TJ McConnell, yes, I agree with. I actually like Noel if he plays at 7,400. I think there's a spot for him to put up some decent numbers against whatever crap the Raptors are running out at power forward. And Kyle Lowry at 8,000, he won't need 30 minutes to put up big numbers. He might play 32 and put up, you know, decent numbers. Yes, he's priced at 8,000, but it is not a bad option for me. What do you make of Nick Stauskas at 4,400?
I'd probably pass. I think there's some other shooting guards who are probably in that 4-6 price range who I like a little bit better.
I tend to agree with that. The Indiana Pacers and the Boston Celtics is up next. The Celtics are favored by 2.5 points. I don't know why I said it like that. And we've got a total of 203.5. Avery Bradley is questionable with that leg issue, the bruised leg. Rodney Stuckey is questionable with a sprained ankle, which he re-sprained in the last game. If Bradley is out, Evan Turner is the guy who gets the biggest boost there. So look for him. He's a mid-price range guy. He's 5,700. But if there's no Marcus Smart and there's no Avery Bradley, Turner is going to get a lot more opportunity. And he becomes a guy, even at that price, where you definitely have to consider looking at him, and he becomes a solid cash game guy. I don't know if he's got enough upside at 5,700 to play in tournaments. Maybe, but I think that you want to watch that situation. Tournaments, the big men for the Celtics are the guys we look at here, because obviously in tournaments you want to go for guys who potentially could go off for big nights. So a player like Jared Sullinger at 5,200 is not a bad option, although he's been fairly solid for cash games as well. But Kelly Olynyk's probably the main one, who's at 3,700. He did play 20 minutes in the last game. He scored 11 points, only 13 fantasy points. But the game before that, he was at 40 in similar minutes. So he's in one of those sort of lottery ticket sort of players that at a low salary could go off. And I do like Isaiah Thomas without Marcus Smart around. Jay Crowder at 4,700 is probably one of the best value guys on the board as well. What else? What else for this one? What about Paul George at 8,900 on FanDuel? Matt, what do you think of him?
Yeah, just looking at Paul George, a little bit more expensive on Moneyball, 9,600, but
well, that's expensive.
He has had a 59-point game and a 50-point game in his last three. So if you've got that cash to play around with, then and you need a power forward, probably. I do like Isaiah Thomas as well, only if Marcus Smart is out again. And as you said, Jared Sullinger, 6,400 here on Moneyball for a cheaper power forward option.
Yep, agree with pretty much all of that. Monte Ellis is at 6,300. That's too expensive for a guy who can be up and down. And Jan Mahinmi at 4,500 is someone to sort of consider, but let's not put too much stock in Jan Mahinmi. Brooklyn and Houston up next. Now we're talking a big total, 206 points, but the Rockets are favored by 12.5, and this has got blowout written all over it. Plus, it's got uncertain lineup written all over it, because with Houston, we are expecting the return of Terrence Jones and expecting the return of Patrick Beverley from a concussion for Beverley, a lacerated eyelid for Terrence Jones. And just a quick PSA, Matt, if Terrence Jones is available in your league, you need to make sure he's owned.
Yes, do, please. And about time he's back. I've been waiting for two and a half weeks.
Yes, definitely about time. I don't know how this I literally have no idea what's going to happen with this rotation. I've made my best guesses with setting the projections on Basketball Monster, and I'll redo those a little bit later when I'll get back into it again. But I find it hard to think that Marcus Thornton is going to be eliminated from the rotation.
Well, is there a chance that Thornton stays in the starting lineup and Jones comes off the bench?
Yeah, I think there's a massive chance of that happening. I don't know exactly how they're going to do it. I don't think there's a chance that Thornton plays the 37 minutes a game that he has been playing. I think that's probably a little bit unlikely. But to think that he's going to go from... And remember, this is a guy who didn't play the first two games. And then when Jones went out, he went 31 minutes, 37, 29, 42, 38. So he started putting up big numbers. I can't see him going back to playing nothing. I've got him at 28 for tomorrow. I think that means they'll go small a lot, so it's going to take a bit of a hit away from Clint Capella. It'll take Jones will play a bit of center, so I think you'll see Jones, Howard, and Capella playing center. You'll see Trevor Ariza a lot at the four. I think it's going to cut Beverly's time down as well, as Harden plays a bit more point guard to get some of these wing guys out there like Thornton. I just don't know how it's going to play out though. It's weird to me, and I would be shocked to see Thornton not get big minutes or not get decent minutes. Maybe is a better way of putting it.
Yeah. So that means have we got any word on Brook Lopez?
Yeah, that's the other one I'm going to get to. He looks like he's going to play. Yeah. The foot is fine. There's no problem. He missed bits of practice with back spasms, and it's not something that's really bothering him or the Nets. It looks like he is right to go. He's considered probable, so again, that's a 75% chance of playing. If we know for sure that he's going to play, he's not a bad option at 7,900. He's not the best option on the board. I still think that Thaddeus Young is great at 5,700. I reckon that's a real nice price for him. He's been putting up some pretty decent numbers of late, and at that price, that's worth it. And Thornton, I like him at 4,500, but there's a lot of risk involved because we don't know exactly what sort of role he's going to play. But at 4,500, if he puts up 25 fantasy points, then you're almost right in that area where you need to be. So in a tournament, maybe you put him in a lineup and that works out well for you. Harden at 10,100, we know that his role is not going to really change. And the only thing that is going to be the issue is the blowout nature of this game. So that limits him a little bit, but he's still a decent guy. What are your thoughts on some of the other players here or any of those guys I just talked about?
Yeah, in general, I'm probably staying away from most of them. I think it could be Howard versus Lopez in the paint, and then they're just going to surround them with shooters, whether that be, your Thornton, Ariza's, Corey Brewer's, Bogdanovic, Jones, So James Harden. I haven't worked out who I'm going to be spending the majority of my money on. Might largely depend on Anthony Davis, but if he's out, then James Harden will come right into calculations. But in general, with Jones back, that makes Thornton really iffy for mine. If Jones doesn't play, then Thornton becomes a must start in my book.
That's right.
But apart from that, there's not a real lot I'm getting excited about.
There's a little bit to be excited about with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at his low salary. He put up almost 24 FanDuel points in the last game. Probably don't expect him to get that many again, but if he gets 20 at 3,600, that's a pretty decent head start, allowing you to roster some of these other high-priced guys. But the whole situation is a little bit messy in terms of this Houston rotation. Jarrett Jack and Joe Johnson, we can leave those guys alone, I think, in most situations. The next game, Golden State versus Memphis. The Grizzlies will be looking to avenge their 50-point loss the last time these two teams met. The Warriors are still favored by 7.5. We have a total of 200.5. Klay Thompson was complaining about a sore back. He looks like he'll be fine to go. The Grizzlies guys, we don't know if Chalmers or Ennis are going to be available to play. Even if Ennis was available to play, he probably wouldn't. The Chalmers would get some minutes, so he's worth mentioning just in the fact that if he doesn't play, then Mike Conley's going to have to get more minutes, and maybe Russ Smith gets somewhat into calculations. I probably doubt it, but he would be their other backup point guard. Brandon Wright is also considered questionable from the Memphis Grizzlies. There's not a lot that I love from this game, to be honest. I don't, you know, Curry at 10,700. Yes, he's been great, but I don't think I want him at 10,700. Marc Gasol is a guy that has been probably disappointing, is fair to say. His price at 7,100. I reckon there's a little bit of value in him here because I don't imagine many people will be taking him, and you might be able to get an advantage if he bounces back and has a decent game because he's not finished. There's a lot of value still left in Marc Gasol. I think that he's not a bad option there. How do you see what Gasol's doing at the moment?
Been pretty disappointing in season-long legs. Priced here on Moneyball is 7,900, so a little bit more expensive.
But you know what? Everyone on Moneyball is expensive, and I don't know why that is, but everyone's overpriced in comparison to FanDuel. So what that means is on Moneyball tournaments, the number that you need to win is probably going to be lower. So you don't need 300 points. If you get 280 or 270, you generally can win your double-ups and head-to-heads.
So, yeah, probably pass on that, Marc Gasol. And the other one is just to know that Andrew Bogut's back, so that will limit Festus Azili. Azili may still start with Bogut off the bench, but be careful of that situation when you're setting your lineups.
That's the way it's leaning at the moment, is that Azili is going to start this game as well, and don't know if it's going to be a permanent thing. Azili started the last game and played about 24 minutes. So, even when Bogut was out, he was only playing 22 to 24 minutes anyway, and he was still having some value. So I'm not completely shying away from Festus Azili. He still could get that 22 to 24 minutes. I think it's almost guaranteed that he gets those 22 to 24 minutes because Maurice Spates has been doing nothing. Jason Thompson's been healthy scratches most nights. It'll be pretty much Bogut and Azili playing the five with Draymond Green playing a few minutes there. So you could see 22 minutes for Azili, 22 for Bogut, and a couple of minutes from Draymond Green there. And it wouldn't shock me at all if he still continues to get the same amount of minutes with Bogut out. The rest of the Grizzlies guys, Conley, Randolph, I don't think I want anything to do with them. Draymond Green is priced a little bit too high for my liking as well at 7,800. And against Zach Randolph, it's not a great matchup for him. It's not a great matchup for Randolph, but I don't think that it allows Green to really put up his great fantasy numbers. And all the wing players in Memphis, we can forget about all those guys. Anything else from this game that you want to talk about?
Not that's all.
Cool. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Atlanta Hawks. The Pelicans fresh off their first win of the season. The Hawks, though, are favored by 9. It's a big total, 212. And obviously the one we need to pay attention to is Anthony Davis, whether he plays or not. Now, Matt, we are 12-plus hours away from the start of the game. We're 16 hours away from the start of the game. Does he play?
I will say they will be cautious and he won't play.
I would say the same thing. I would lean that way as well and say that Anthony Davis will not play. If he does play, I think he's a really good option to use, but I think it's leaning like that he won't. So that means that Ryan Anderson comes into play at 5,800 on FanDuel. He had a big game today. He's a guy I'd pay attention to. Do not pay attention to Omer Asik. Do not go and look at him to be a guy who racks up big numbers. That just doesn't happen. But what it does do, I think that if Davis doesn't play, then Al Horford gets a boost from Atlanta because he doesn't have to worry, and Paul Millsap, they don't have to worry about Anthony Davis. They can worry about the defense of Ryan Anderson instead. So both of those guys get value. So Horford at 7,500, Millsap at 8,300 because he's been absolutely killing it. Both of those guys become value guys. The other thing is New Orleans backcourt just hemorrhages points. So cheap guys like Dennis Schroeder, this could be an opportunity for him to get 20 minutes and put up 25 points because they're such a bad backcourt. The point guard situation in New Orleans, we don't know what's going to happen there as well. So we don't know if Holiday's playing. Is he going to play 24 minutes? Is he going to play 15 minutes? Is he not going to play at all? So monitor that situation. But Ish Smith becomes obviously the guy if we know that Holiday is going to be limited and Smith plays big minutes. Jeff Teague's a guy to pay attention to, and that further strengthens Dennis Schroeder's chance of being a daily fantasy option because Teague is being investigated for a possible suspension for punching Nemanja Bjelica in the face. So Teague might be suspended for this game, so that would mean extra minutes for Dennis Schroeder. Obviously, he'd become an interesting season-long stream, although with 11 games, you might not even get him into your active lineup. But for daily fantasy, there'd be a lot to love if that did happen. Anything else from this game? Kent Bazemore an option? Or you think his prices are gone up too much now?
No, I still like him at $5,000, starting there at shooting guard, small forward, next to Kyle Korver, and all of those guys you mentioned, totally agree. Ish Smith, Dennis Schroeder, Eric Gordon as well in the backcourt there. Ryan Anderson, Jeff Teague, Horford, Millsap. Yeah, this game's got a ton of value.
The Clippers and the Mavericks is up next. This is DeAndre Jordan traveling to the Dallas Mavericks. It's going to be must-watch TV to see exactly how he is treated. It won't be well. To see how they handle him, how often they send him to the free throw line. It could be disgustingly ugly to watch. The Clippers are favored by 7. There is a massive total of 213.5. I think the Mavericks might try and keep it a bit, well, they'll definitely try and keep it closer, but I think they might be playing with a little bit of emotion to keep it within 7. Fantasy-wise, though, I don't know where there's any real value here. Blake Griffin's priced at over 10,000. Yes, he's been good, but at over 10,000, he's got to be putting up 50 plus, and I'm not all that confident with him doing it. I don't think it's a great option. Chris Paul at 9,100, I definitely don't want him in this sort of situation. And DeAndre Jordan at 8,000, could he get sat due to hacking strategy? I don't know. What do you make of the big three Clippers guys or anyone else from this game?
Yeah, I actually think this game's going to be a complete blowout, and yeah, I'm going to be avoiding all three of those guys. The only guy I want from Dallas is Dwight Powell, 4,600 at power forward, cheap option, and with the blowout, he could play, the whole of the last quarter. Chris Paul, is he questionable? Is he good to go?
No, he should be good to go. He played the last game with that groin, played 34 minutes, didn't seem to be a problem, so I think he's fine to go.
Yep, but no. Look, if you want to go with Blake Griffin, then they're not going to be able to defend him, but I just get this feeling that it'll be over, around halftime.
We have the Milwaukee Bucks at the Denver Nuggets. This is a weird one to me. The Nuggets are favored by 1.5. The Bucks are clearly better than the Nuggets. I just think the reason they are favored is that it's a back-to-back in Denver. So teams on the second half of a back-to-back in Denver with the altitude, they do struggle. So bear that in mind. Even though it looks dumb on the surface that Denver is favored, that's the reason. It's a low total, 198.5. Denver is a mess with injuries. Joffrey Lavernier has been ruled out already. Kenneth Faried is currently listed as probable with a gluteal contusion. So he's got a bruised ass. Jameer Nelson is questionable with a back sprain. Nikola Jokic is questionable with a back sprain as well. And for the Bucks, we have Michael Carter-Williams is questionable, OJ Mayo has questionable with a hamstring, and Jabari Parker has been ruled out. So there are a number of guys all over the place here. I am not liking this at all, except if we know Carter-Williams is out, Jared Bayless is priced at 3,700. He becomes a really good cheap point guard. And if we have Jokic out and Faried out, especially JJ Hickson, if we know that JJ Hickson's getting the start, he put up 42 in the last game. He's at 4,400, and he is worth a look. Everyone else? I don't think so. There's not much that I like there.
Yeah, it's difficult. Will Barton's been a guy who's been hot and cold, so he'll be hard to run out. As you said, with no Jabari Parker, Giannis, Chris Middleton maybe there on the wings.
Chris Copeland's going to get some minutes. Of course, Johnny O'Brien will have to play his 17 minutes and do nothing. Could we see John Henson? Yeah. Who knows?
Or if you want to not complete left field, but someone who's the same price as Jared Bayless, but you want to go slightly different, maybe Grievous Vasquez there as well. He can have some reasonable games. Been inconsistent in the last couple, but he has had games where he's put up, I can tell you, sort of 29, sort of mid 20 points, which is enough at $4,400.
Detroit Pistons and Sacramento Kings. The Kings are favored by 1.5 here. And yeah, I know I said that it was weird that the Nuggets were favored over the Bucks. This is even more bizarre to me that the Kings are favored by 1.5 here with a total of 203 against a team like Detroit who's been playing so well lately. Can't say I understand that at all. Detroit, Reggie Jackson is probable with a thigh bruise. He'll likely play. Darren Collison is questionable with his hamstring for Sacramento. And Seth Curry is questionable with his ankle. He doesn't really matter, though, but Collison does. If Collison doesn't play, Rajon Rondo played 48 minutes in the last game, so he's going to get a significant boost, even though his salary has jumped to 6,400. If he's playing 48 minutes, I think I definitely know that I like him. Otherwise, I'll leave him alone. Andre Drummond is pushing 10,000. Yeah, he's been awesome, but 10,000 it's making it a little bit tough. He's going up against DeMarcus Cousins, probably one of the guys who's one of the harder matchups for him in the league. So I reckon it might be time to fade Andre Drummond at that price. And Marcus Morris is probably the best value guy on the board, 5,900. But I also like Costa Kufos at 4,300 for the Sacramento Kings. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Stanley Johnson have a little bit of value as wing players also. What about Boogie, 10,200 on FanDuel? What do you think of Boogie's value going up against Andre Drummond?
Well, it's probably still a little bit early for me coming back from injury, second game back. So I'd probably prefer to spend that money elsewhere. Like for a similar price, I'd probably prefer to go with James Harden. And yeah, I agree with most of that. I don't mind Rondo. I haven't used him in DFS, but he comes into calculations. And Stanley Johnson, he's a real roughie. Someone, I'm sorry I keep using these Australian terms. Someone tweeted me and asked me what a roughie is. What was your definition, description?
What was it? I don't remember what I said. It's a roughie is a, no, it's a long shot.
Yes.
Yeah, long correct. Shot is the best way of doing it.
Yeah, so in his last game, Stanley Johnson had 28 points the game before he had two.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, there you go.
So, yeah, roughy. Last game of the night, the San Antonio Spurs and the Portland Trailblazers. The Spurs are favored by 8. It's a low total of 199.5. There is nothing that looks really great from this point of view. Gerald Henderson is potentially back as well, just to complicate things on the wing. In Portland, there is still a little bit of value there from a couple of guys. I think Danny Green at 4,200 and even Tony Parker at 4,800. They're worth looking at. Myers Leonard at 45 is an okay guy. And Damian Lillard at 93. He's getting a ton of minutes and putting up a ton of points. They're all guys that are worth looking at to me. CJ McCollum has cooled off a little bit in his daily fantasy output. Are you still liking him in this sort of situation?
I am normally. This is a really tough matchup against the Spurs and Danny Green on the wing. Kawhi Leonard has been someone I've just been plugging in every single night. $8,500 just gets the job done. Alvaro Camino is probably getting a little bit expensive at 5,900. Yep. Myers Leonard, if you want another cheap option in the tournament, 4,700. I do like Danny Green. At 4.5. I used him a couple of times in the first week and he burnt me, but you just know that this big game is around the corner, and when he does and you own him, he's going to win you some big money.
Exactly. LaMarcus Aldridge, we're still definitely right off. We don't want anything to do with him.
What about a revenge game?
There's revenge game. At that price, I don't care that it's a revenge game. At over 8,000, 8,100, he's averaging 30 points, and that is great on the surface, but it would be great if he cost $6,000, not at 8,000. He needs to be giving you 36 to 40 regularly, and he's not. So there's that possibility. There's also the possibility this game's over by the start of the fourth quarter, and he plays 25 minutes. So I don't want anything to do with LaMarcus Aldridge in this situation. You can put him in. I won't be. What I'm going to do now is put up my three picks at each position up on the screen. We've talked about most of these guys already. Point guard, Corey Joseph, 3,700. Isaiah Thomas at 73 and Kyle Lowry at 8,000. The shooting guards, Nick Young at 36, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at 5,200 and James Harden at 10,100. At small forward, Jay Crowder at 47, Marcus Morris at 59 and Paul George at 8,900. And power forward, Luis Scola at 4,300. Thad Young at 47, Blake Griffin at 10,200, and at center, Dwayne Dedman, assuming Nick Vucevic is out, at 4,100, Marc Gasol at 71, and Al Horford at 7,500. That does it for today's podcast. Matt, thank you for joining me. Thank you for jumping on. Where can everyone find you on Twitter, and where can they find any of your work?
You can find me on Twitter at SmanSports. Don't forget to jump into tomorrow's Moneyball contest. There's 550 spots, 118 are currently taken. You can find my work all over the place, a bit of preseason stuff at hashtag basketball.com. Joey sent me a tweet. It got over 20,000 views for my positional tiers, so thanks to everyone who read them. I also find some of my work on RotoWire. I haven't done anything to start the season. We're only a few weeks in, so we'll pump out some articles shortly. And yeah, you can also check out All Star 5 as well. Got a few membership options over there if you want some of the best fantasy basketball advice going around in long format. You can get it in short format on Twitter, long format at allstar5.com.
Definitely. And make sure you are following both Matt and myself on Twitter. I am redrock_beeble. And again, try to, if you can, spend a couple of minutes, jump onto iTunes and leave a review for the podcast. You will become a sponsor of the show and get a big shout out on the show. And you'll also be helping to grow the podcast as much as possible. So thank you to everyone who has done that so far. Matt, again, thank you for jumping on. It's been great having you on the show.
Thanks, Josh.
No problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.